Good morning, it's Tuesday, June 28th. The interviewer is Yoni Friedman. I'm here with Mr. Abraham Simmons. Thank you so much. Could you please introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background.
Abraham Simmons, engineer, graduate business school at Claremont University, executive MBA, former employee of Air Liberia, former employee of Volpar Incorporated, McDonnell Douglas, UPS, Air Group.
So when did you come to Roberts Airport?
In 2007. I had retired 2 years earlier, and a business associate was traveling, and he had a very terrible experience at the airport. So I called the Minister of State and told him I'd be glad to take a look at that operation and see what I could do to improve things over there. And that's how I got to Roberts at International Airport. Conversation with Minister Edward McLean, Minister of State for Presidential Affairs.
And what was the situation at Roberts Airport when you first arrived?
Facilities were inadequate. Service was atrocious. Throughput was very low. The physical accommodations at the airport were in a dire need of renovation, a rebuild. We didn't have enough, there was not enough room to handle the flow of passengers coming through the airport. These were all problems that had been identified in a 2003 study that was done for the United Nations through the World Bank, and it had not been implemented. So there was an opportunity there to get those things going.
The World Bank made recommendations as to how to...
Yeah, there was a study done that recommended increasing the size of the facility, that it pointed out the inadequacies in human resources. There was a need for training that had not occurred for decades. The skill sets had to be improved, and a program had to be put in place to ensure that the resources generated at the airport would pay for these items.
To your knowledge, why weren't the World Bank recommendations implemented between 03 and 07?
I don't know, I wasn't here. I can't speak for the others. I would think you need to go and talk to those who were involved in the airport over those years, but I can't tell you why they didn't undertake them. But the need still existed when I got there in 2007.
Okay. So what resources did you have at your disposal to...
Well, the airport was broke. They were in debt. They had some airlines coming through. The problem was ensuring that the fees generated at the airport were properly accounted for. That we have some means of getting money to get things done. In addition to that, you have to have the right people doing the right thing at the airport. There was a process started because of the financial condition of the airport. There was a process started to reduce the staff at the airport. Over the years, people had just been sent over there for jobs, whether they were qualified or not. It was a very bloated payroll. And so you had to go and find out what these people were doing, find out what was required for the level of service you were providing, and start doing things to bring the number of persons available in sync with the service delivery.
Did you conduct that? Basically, you're talking about a functional review?
There was a functional review for each department. We utilized people within the department to do the first level reviewing. Those results were brought up to a group that was a multidisciplinary group of people at the airport to utilize, because what's happening in one area affects another area. It may be a handoff situation, be a first or secondary type handoffs, but you get those people to come in and say, yes, I think your conclusions are right, or no, I think there are other things needed to be included or to be done. So that process went ahead. And at the end of that, we were able to come up with what we thought was the number of persons that should be working at the airport. And those who were not, who didn't make the cut, we had to make sure that they were removed from the payroll, following all of the laws that the Ministry of Labor has established.
Did you encounter any resistance?
Of course, if people are not ever happy to leave their jobs, especially if they're not qualified. They claim political linkages, they claim tenure. We've been around since the Second War that happened 15 years ago, but that's not a reason for continuing in a position. It has to be based on your skill set, what you bring to the organization that enables it to meet its goals and objectives.
Was this, in effect, an attempt to change the culture?
That had to happen. People need to understand that any organization starts with the values. And these should be shared values. And people have to understand why they exist and how exceeding those bounds that are established defeat the purpose of what you're trying to achieve. And when they buy into it and see that it is a top-down commitment, and people follow suit and attitudes change. Not only do you have to establish clear rules of engagement, people should know that there are clearly defined penalties for violation. And when they do violate it, it isn't a matter of saying, okay, you get another shot and you get another one the next week down the road. If you violate the rules, there are clear-cut repercussions, and you will bear them. And once they know that, people perform appropriately.
Did you seek political supporters, essentially, to implement these reforms, to deal with some of the resistance?
Well, those who tried to do that found out that it didn't amount to anything. People run to different ministers and people in government to champion their causes, but when they know that's not going to change the decision, they gave up. I had a mandate to straighten up the airport, an appointment from the president, and that's it. I did what I was mandated to do.
So what was the first thing you did when you took your position?
First thing I did was to ensure that we had a clear chain of custody for our revenues, and then to ensure that people knew what their areas of responsibilities were. You had people in one segment of the organization trying to do things that were the responsibilities of another area. And you can't do that because it leads to chaos. So we clearly defined, we had a series of workshops, clearly defined responsibilities. At the same time, through the auspices of the U.S. government, we had consultants come in to start putting together a policy manual. We ended up with a 5-volume airport operations manual. But as that was being developed, we started training the staff into the new processes and procedures that they have to follow. And implementing it even before the work was completed, it gave us a chance to sort of validate some of the approaches we were taking. And if things were not working well, maybe we needed to modify what we were doing or find out why they weren't working and make other changes to make it happen.
Who led the workshops for the staff?
Some of them by me, some by the GMAP controller, Alex Coffey. Some by others we brought in as consultants.
What sorts of topics were covered in the workshops? You mentioned.
Well, it varies. If it was in the accounting area, you know, you talk about document flow, or in procurement, what's required, what are the documents that we're going to use, from requisition through issuing of purchase orders and reviewing on a periodic basis the needs of the airport, setting up a committee to do that, selecting vendors, qualification of vendors, things of that nature. We had different people come in and do courses or seminars or one-day sessions or two-hour sessions on it. Some of them we broke up into many topics because we thought that was the best way to get people to absorb what was being taught rather than trying to put them through a four-week course on whatever the subject matter might be. We try to keep it focused to the day-to-day activities. And then as they learn those, then you start giving them a broader and broader picture of what of the world they were in.
Did you find that the staff were receptive to the training courses?
People always want to learn. People want to learn, especially if they see things are being better organized. Once you take uncertainty out of the process and things are regular and predictable, people are receptive to that, and so that's what we did.
So what was unpredictable about the processes before you arrived?
Well, for example, a man who was in charge of maintenance wouldn't know if he would have the materials he needs on time to get a certain thing done because the airport didn't know it would have the money to pay the vendor who's holding up supply of this of these items to the airport, or that we didn't have transportation available because we didn't get the repairs done to certain type of vehicles on time. So it's a myriad of issues that affect day-to-day operations. And you have to see where those bottlenecks are and clean them up.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the first thing you did was secure the revenue flow.
Absolutely.
Well, why was that your first priority?
You can't do anything without money. People cannot be coming to the airport and paying bills, and the money isn't accounted for. And that was one of the problems they had.
What were the weaknesses in accounting for revenues?
A system that ensured that we tied in movements at the airport to revenues. So basically, that was it. So once you do that and there's an audit trail, you're fine, you're good. You stop the leakages.
What was in place when you came? What systems were in place to account for revenues?
Not much. There was a department responsible for it, but usually the leakages occurred before they were even informed that the revenue was available. So we had to do things to cure that problem.
How would leakages occur?
How did they occur?
I mean, at that earliest, at the
because people circumvented the system, and instead of pointing the clients in the right direction to ensure that things were done in an orderly manner, revenues got diverted.
Was it a matter of corruption, or was it a matter of just bypassing?
Theft, pure and simple. Mm-hmm. Theft. So once you ensure that every movement is recognized and all of the supporting departments are aware of that movement, then everybody can be mobilized to accomplish what he has to do in that process to make sure that the customer has a successful visit to RIA.
So how did you account or make the revenue flow more transparent? How did you prevent the old habits from persisting?
Well, because you establish a process that has to be followed, and anybody who tries to circumvent it was fired.
Did you have to fire people?
Absolutely. I have no compulsion about doing that. If you don't obey the rules, you suffer the penalties. So once people know that's the name of the new game in town, everybody fell in line.
Did you have to closely monitor the revenue process to make sure that it was being followed, or
on a daily basis? I ensured that the accounting department gave me a daily cash position we knew what accounts they were in. We did some validations with the banks. And once the entire flow is validated from the customer landing through money in the bank account, we're good. Anybody who tried to interject himself into that process was removed from the system.
I understand that before your arrival, there were issues of fees being processed after hours when they mm-hmm. had been. How did you deal with those issues?
We established a procedure for after hours collection of revenue and put that in place, and that's it. And nobody wanted to violate those guidelines. Because if you were the person who did that, you were out of the airport.
Mm-hmm. So what effect did you see on leakages?
This stopped. Instead of when I got there were $250,000, a cash shortfall of about $250,000. When I left, we had $1 million cash in the bank. And our revenues were such that our costs were maintained below what was required, and we generated a surplus going forward at the way we had the operations when I left there in 2009.
How much of that was because of cracking down on leakages? How much of that was just increased revenue flow from increased?
Well, it's a matter of both. Mm-hmm. We didn't go back to do a retrospective on what would have happened if the current conditions existed that were there prior to 2007. But we did note the increase in revenues, and we noted our efforts to streamline our costs, to bring them in line for the services that we're providing. We did benchmarking to see if our services were competitive in the region. We then went ahead and operated based on those new targets, and as a result, we ran a profitable operation.
Okay, can I ask you a bit about procurement practices?
Yeah.
So, what were the state of? How transparent were procurement practices when you first?
Not very. Helter skelter. I noticed first of all there were too many suppliers. Mm-hmm. Secondly, supplies were not brought in at a regular basis. People were not projecting what they wanted. We were not going back and looking at our usages to establish min-maxes for different areas of the operation. We were getting things from a $5 store in one section, a large importer in another, and it was just not controlled. So what we had to do, first of all, was look at all of the suppliers and decide we're going to deal with, for different category of products, we'll deal with the top two people in each area, or the top three.
How do you identify those people?
Well, you get information from places like the Ministry of Commerce. What's the volume of items? Are they a major importer or not? What are the major products they import? And then you look at the availability of to meet your needs as they develop. See if they'll work with you based on an increase in volume. Because once you consolidate your purchases, you now have negotiating power. And that's what we did. So we reduced the number of suppliers we had and went from there.
Do you remember about how many suppliers?
No, I don't remember the numbers.
Okay. And you're talking for large equipment or?
Everything. Basic? From paper clips to cargo loaders for the airplane.
Did that bring savings? Or
absolutely it did, because our price per item went down. Just getting those discounts were good. Our cost of transportation was down. For example, there's a supplier not far from the airport who supplies a lot of things to Firestone. He brings goods up in bulk. The airport has stopped dealing with him because they have refused to pay him primarily. Guys, I'm not going to give you any more supplies. But you know, transportation costs went down. Instead of having to truck everything up directly for us on a unit cost basis, we were sharing cost advantage with Firestone Plantation, things like that. So we notice it's all of these little saving initiatives that enable you to bring your cost of operating down.
Are there any other saving initiatives outside of the ones that you've already mentioned that played a role?
Well, we had to get more efficient in how we deliver services. Right after my taking over the operations at the airport, the U.S. Ambassador Donald Booth sent the consul, Lou Mazel, up to me, said that the U.S. government had made a commitment in 2003 to provide about $3 million to the airport to buy some equipment. Well, a lot of our equipment were old and ratty. And so that was a godsend. Don't ask me why nobody took advantage of that or why it didn't happen. But what we did was to then go ahead and see if the number of equipment we thought would be purchased could still be purchased within those dollar volumes. We did that exercise. I went back to Ambassador Booth and told him, we needed more money. He said, thanks for doing your homework. I'll find you more money. So he did that, and we're able to order a lot of equipment for the airport doing that, fire trucks and buses and stairs. But there were things that we needed more urgently. And we couldn't wait for the process because the process of getting funding through USAID and the US government is lengthy. So we went on the market and saw some of those items that we needed urgently, and we purchased them from airport revenue. We looked at things like our communication equipment in the tower. They were old. They needed to be upgraded. And we paid for those. We had to send people for training. We sent them to South Africa, to Sweden, to Malaysia, to the United States. And we paid for the training from the airport resources. But we had to do those things to ensure the reliability of the services that the airport promises its customers. And if they are navigating here, the NAF equipment at the airport should work. Communication equipment should work. If you can't get them here, you can't make any money. So we spend money doing those things.
At what point did USAID approach you?
Probably about 2 months after I got there.
Okay.
The ambassador called. I should have contacted him earlier. I had planned to, but when I got there, I was trying to get my hands around the many problems and challenges that were there. But we did get together, and I can assure you we worked together very well until his departure from his assignment here.
So in a sense, you had to balance, in a sense, short-term priorities versus long-term priorities.
Absolutely.
So how did you, how did you delineate your set of priorities? Short-term and long-term?
Well, you look at your operation, you know what has to be addressed today to make tomorrow happen. You know, and you look at all of those things and you hit them hard and do them as rapidly as you can, but you cannot keep your eyes off the long-term goal. The long-term goal was to get what the study called the phase one activities completed. And so
was this based on the World Bank report?
Based on the World Bank report. That would allow you to operate at a certain capacity level for 3 years. And in that time, you can start planning, doing things that go to phase two, and then to phase three. So basically, that's what we did.
So what was the significance of those benchmarks? What would you be after at the completion of stage one?
Well, the number of passengers you're able to handle would increase to a certain level. Your throughput would increase. You will know what sort of revenue you can generate at that level. And it's the service delivery quality improvements that you wanted to raise to that phase one level. For example, we did a complete renovation of the arrival departure area at the airport. and ensure that we had the places air conditioned, that the laboratories were improved, that the restaurants were upgraded, seating was improved. So we did those things that would improve the service delivery at the airport. Even for people waiting, there was nowhere those who were waiting, there was a tent under a tree, and we worked with some private firms to build a little restaurant on the outside so people have a place to sit and have a cold drink or a sandwich if they could not go in the sanitized areas of the airport. We tried to do that with other facilities. We would have done it because we were planning on doing something for a clubhouse type operation on the edge of the river, and but somebody else can handle that. But those are the kind of things you need to look at and do.
Were most of the short-term goals financed internally?
Right? Most of them were internally financed. Our only external source of funding was from the donation from the U.S. government for equipment purchases. That was it.
Okay.
Everything else was from internally generated funds.
When were those larger purchases made?
If you're talking about airport handling equipment, I'll say about 2007, we had an agency in Washington, D.C. that was going to handle the acquisition of all these items. 2008, we did the final scrub on the list and started placing orders. And by the time I left in February of 2009, equipment were in the pipeline coming in.
So you mentioned, is Roberts now in the process of implementing Stage 2?
I have no idea. I haven't followed up on anything they're doing.
Okay. So did you complete Stage 1 during your tenure?
Yes, we did.
You said it's supposed to take 3 years, essentially.
Yeah.
And you were there for, it sounds like, about 2 years.
I was there for about 20 months, yeah.
20 months.
But what was done would enable the airport to operate for 3 years. And then, but during those 3 years, they should have been doing things to, for example, start building a new terminal building, mm-hmm. start putting in a new runway, putting in a new water system, power generation, how are you going to run this new airport? Things of that nature. Those plans should have been done or completed by the end of year three so that construction is going on and you're ready for the next phase of expansion.
So those are things that should have been done during the three-year period beginning after the completion of Stage 1?
After the completion of Stage 1.
Okay, so essentially we're in year two now of that three-year process.
Absolutely.
Okay, I got it. What role did meeting international standards, ICAO and TSA standards, play in your in setting your priorities?
Well, you have to do that. For example, the airport is insured, and your insurance company is not going to carry you if you are not operating to international standards. We have reviews by our insurer. We have reviews by international agencies. You have reviews from the airlines operating here because they have to do a review of the airport to ensure that what the conditions here are safe for them to continue to operate here. Because one of the shutdown things we had to do was to fix our nav system. And that meant spending about $400,000 right off the bat. So we got a company from England, give them a contract to come in and start doing that. But that was necessary because it ensured reliability, that the level of service that you're providing ensures that these guys can come in here any time of the year with some degree of certainty. You won't have unnecessary diversions because this is out and you hit minimums and you can't come in. So we had to do those things.
Did you meet, were you meeting international standards when you first arrived?
No, we had shortages, we had gaps that had to be addressed. communication and navigation equipment, lighting, airport lighting, those sorts of things, markings, repairs to certain areas of the taxiway and runway. Those things have to be done.
Do finances play a role, revenue and procurement practices, do they play a role in international standards as well, or are they concerned
with
the infrastructure?
They did that because you couldn't address any of those issues without revenue. The government wasn't writing a check to do it. So you had to do that.
So meeting international standards would have benefits both in reducing your insurance payments as well as reputation and sort of attracting...
It makes it more attractive for airlines to come here. They can now increase the frequency of coming here, like, for example, Brussels Airlines did. You saw people re-entering the market, Kenya Airways, and other carriers that were coming. You know. So it pays both ways. Once you have a product that is predictable, and it meets the level of acceptance of your clients, they'll utilize it.
Mm-hmm. When was attracting new airlines, was that a stated priority, or was that more?
It was one of the goals. Is that a consequence? It was one of the things we tried to do, mm-hmm. to make the airport, bring it up to a level where people would be encouraged to come back into the market. And we had discussions with them. You know, airlines are going around the world looking for opportunities for extending their routes and gathering more passengers and improving their service, improving their revenues. But they'll do that if you're able to accommodate them and provide the level of service they require. One of the things we didn't get to was putting in a catering system, getting an airport hotel built in case of unscheduled failures. People don't have to scramble to come back to Monrovia. And those were all things that we have on the cost to get done. And those are things that need to be done. There are a lot of things that need to be done yet at the airport.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a bit more about the human resource issue? So you mentioned one of the first things you did was a functional review.
Mm-hmm.
But was this soon after taking your post?
Yes, we started it right after I got there, day one.
Okay. Day one.
Who's on board? What are they doing?
Okay.
And how does it contribute to the operation of the airport?
So who assisted you in conducting this review?
We had... Well, it depends. It was for the security sector. We utilized UNMIL. We brought in people from the Liberia National Police to do part of that assessment, because it wasn't just interviews. You had to do background checks and things of that nature. So it was there were various agencies involved. For some of the areas, we had people from the Ministry of Labor. We brought in consultants to assist in the process, talk to different organizations, look at organizations. Because once we started putting together the airport policy manual, airport operations manual, we had about 4 experts from the U.S. who came in to assist in that process, and we utilize their services to look at different aspects of the operation. Say, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And then we just have to marry the number of bodies through that, identify where the gaps are in skill sets, and start doing things to improve them.
So how long did the functional review take?
It went on probably for about, say, 4 or 5 month period.
But were the 4 American consultants, were they from a single consultancy firm?
Yes, they were.
Okay. So at the end of the 4 or 5 months, what changes did you make as a result of the review?
Well, basically we look at the organizational interfaces. We shrunk some departments, grew some others, where there were, for example, in security, we were able to reduce the number of persons there by about, if our numbers escaped me now, I think like 50 or 60 individuals came out of that department. And we looked at operations, looked at ramp support. We looked at the entire fire service. And we made the necessary changes. And then you get a core that you start building around, improving the quality of the individuals in the department, getting them the tools they need, getting the equipment repaired or replaced, making sure that your maintenance, for example, is done regularly so you don't have unscheduled failures. It's a whole bunch of things that we had to do.
Did you do an assessment of the staff as part of the review?
Yes, we did.
How did you conduct the assessment? Was it you personally, or did you have a team?
If the guys reported directly to me, I was in on those assessments myself. You look at the individual, the responsibility he had. You look at what was required. And if there were areas where he needed additional training, then you send him to get the training he needs. We did that in the electrical support area. Avionics support area, we did that in handling, aircraft handling and operations. We did that in fire service. We did that in air traffic control, just everywhere. People needed the training. People needed to be trained because they had been in a Tom Warp for about 10, 15, 20 years where nothing was done. Mm-hmm. So we shot them off to different places and scrambled and had a backup plan in case that didn't work up. Can we get people coming in from another airport to fill in to these areas? So we had contingency plans. Luckily, we had things scheduled to the point where we didn't need to bring in people from other airports, but it worked out okay.
Okay. Was the, so the training was your own, was the training your own initiative? Just your response to the situation at hand, or was it encouraged from externally?
Well, it was driven by the needs that we had at the airport. There were no international organizations saying, go and do training in air traffic control. Okay. Nobody said that. Nobody gave us a penny to do it. But once we found out there was a need after the assessments that were done, we found out what schools would be best for meeting those, providing those improvements, and we sent people off to do that.
Okay. How did the results of the functional review mesh with the plan that was a product of the World Bank report? Did they have, did they in some ways conflict or overlap?
Well, the World Bank report was pretty thorough because it identified weaknesses in various departments. The reviews confirmed them, and so we had to now go in and fix it. And fixing it required either getting new candidates, improving those who were there who had a certain level, but if giving them additional opportunities to improve, their skill sets would meet the organization's objectives. That's what we did. So there was no conflict where a World Bank study said, for example, you need to have a more organized security department. And we said, nah, we don't think so. We think we're pretty good. No, that didn't occur.
But perhaps about prioritizing the acquisition of certain equipment over others, or is that an issue that the functional review would
assume? The functional review drove that, where otherwise we would have just waited and said, let's do human resource training first, and then we'll come in and do equipment. But you didn't have that luxury. There were begging needs operationally, and so you addressed them.
So you mentioned that you...
But you addressed them knowing the overall plan. Now, if we're getting a K-loader now, then we look at our needs for purchasing that equipment downstream and say, okay, no, we don't have to do that. Or reduce the number from 2 to 1 or from 3 to 2 because we are making this acquisition now because the operational needs are driving that.
I know it's 4 years ago already, so numbers would be iffy, but as a result of the functional review, do you remember about what overall change in the number of staff?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember.
But was it a significant amount of staff?
It was significant. It was significant.
So for the staff?
It was over 30%, but I don't remember the exact number.
So for the staff that remain, you mentioned that you stressed training them, building their capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the flexibility to change or to affect the to augment their pay or bring in other incentives?
Yes, we did. We did. We did a review of the pay scale in the organization. We realigned. After we have realigned the organization, we did a comparative pay scale review and submitted that to the board of directors, and it was approved.
Okay. And that effectively augmented salaries?
Yes. Not only did we augment the salaries, but we offered them more benefits. One of the things we had to do was to start repairing a lot of the houses that were destroyed during the war years. And as we put a plan together across the entire spectrum of employees. We had people living in low-level housing, mid-management housing, and upper management. We started repairing houses and offering people accommodations at the airport. It improved attendance because they are now there at the airport and don't have to commute anymore. And it was a pretty good incentive for those who remain to stay working at the airport.
Well, had attendance been an issue?
Yes, it had. Because you had a lot of people commuting. If it's this time of year and it's raining and people can't get cars, they come to work late. Unfortunately, that airline that's coming in is in waiting. It has a schedule and it's going to be there. So
was it more an issue of difficulty getting to work rather than
if it's difficult, people don't like to do things that are difficult. But if you make it easier for them to do it, and when at the airport you have regular buses running, and you ensure that you can get them to work at a certain time and get them home, it made it very easy. Attendance went way up.
Did you make any changes to the promotion system?
Changes to the promotion system. We identify what it took to be promoted. If you wanted to get to this level, as we identified the different levels in an organization, we had criteria established. And if you met those criteria and there was an opening, you know what you had to do to get there to be considered. And it's all in the operations manual of the airport.
Was there a criteria before you arrived? Was there a clear process for promotions in place?
It had not been identified. Because a lot of people felt they had been passed over. A lot of the appointments were done as different leadership groups came into power in the country. They would write and say who's going to hold what position at the airport. Some of those you had to get rid of. Yeah. But that's what it took. You do that.
Did any of these, running these factions, pose any obstacles to you? If you were to fire an employee who was put there by a previous leadership group,
mm-hmm.
Were there instances where that leadership group posed a potential obstacle to you, or could try to intervene in or subvert what you were doing?
No, because I won't allow them. They're not running the organization. And I'm not going to do things contrary to what I want to achieve at an organization because somebody objects. You know, if I am going to do that, I may as well just turn it in and go do something else. I was doing it more out of a need to see the organization improve. I wasn't looking for a job. So there was no leverage they had. What could they do? Tell them to stop? I'll tell them, okay, goodbye. End of story.
Did you have the freedom to hire and fire?
Absolutely. I wouldn't take the job without that. Even people who were recommended by the current administration after the election in 2006, I fired them.
And the administration was on board?
Yeah, they went and cried, but eventually I got a call that said, don't worry about it. It's just what I expected because that was the agreement when I took over.
Was the backing of the, was it the Minister of Transport who was essentially your ally, or who supported you in the political sphere?
Well, start with the president. She appointed me. Mm-hmm. The Minister of Transport didn't. But he was chairman of the board, and we had good working relationships. The first Minister of Transport was good to work with. He's now the Minister of Labor, Jeremiah Salonte.
Can I ask, what is the division of responsibilities between yourself and the board?
Well, as the managing director, you have a responsibility to report to the board quarterly on all aspects of the airport. And as we wrote the airport operations manual, there are certain limits imposed on the managing director that he has to go back to the board for approval before he can exceed them. So those areas of those interfaces are clearly defined now. And so it's easy to know where the boundaries are, what you can and cannot do, but you are operating with the consent and approval of the board of directors.
For what sorts of issues do you need approval from the board?
Well, you look at acquisitions. There are limits. Changes in salaries, if it exceeds the established boundaries. Engaging in new enterprises at the airport, that has to be a board decision. Board review is required. For example, if you want to go in and now establish a manufacturing facility for aviation-related items at the airport, you have to go back to the board for approval before you can do that, undertake that, things of that nature.
Do you have a good relationship with the board?
It's a good working relationship. It wasn't a carte blanche stamp thing. We had our arguments and disagreements, but you let the content of your argument persuade members of the board to vote for you, because it's an open vote. It's not a secret ballot in there. You know, you make your presentation, you get the information to the board ahead of time so they have time to review it, and they can come prepared for the discussions, which makes for a nice, easy meeting rather than throwing surprises at them in the meeting. It worked well.
What was the role of the GMAP controller, of Alex Cuffey?
Alex served as the financial top man. He also served as a trainer for those in that area. He was involved in reviews of all of the persons in the financial or financial related area. He served as a primary contact with our consultants that were provided by the U.S. government. He was very, very effective as a controller where there were things that had to be done, reports done, studies that had to be made. He mobilized the resources within the organization to make sure that that was done so that we get a clear picture of where the organization was financially. Alex was very effective.
So he played a significant role in the functional reviews and...
Absolutely, yes. He sat in all of the board meetings. I don't recall any board meeting at which the members of the board asked him to be excused because he was not a designated member of the board. He was in all of the board meetings, participated in the discussions when asked, or there are times he made presentations to the board on certain financial matters. We looked at salary structure and allocation of resources and things of that nature. He did the financial presentation. Later on, as part of the transition process, we started bringing Jacob Corner, who's now in charge of the financial operations of the airport, brought him in on board. So it worked out well. It was a nice transition from Alex to Jacob. So he was aware of what's happening, and I presume things are working well over there for him.
Did, coming from GMAT, was Mr. Cuffey able to bring extra resources to the either financial or technical?
He did. For example, he knew that when we were looking at upgrading our IT capability at the airport, that there was a way we could get additional funding from an agency of the U.S. government to supplement what we wanted done. And just having that knowledge saved the airport some money. So there are other little ways he was effective besides his regular GMAP financial control responsibilities.
Were there any conditions? I mean, I'm aware of the Mr. Cuffey, did he have co-signatory authority?
Over, a what?
A co-signatory authority over certain financial transactions? Did he have any authority of that nature?
Well, GMAP had to co-sign on all the expenditures of the airport, whereas a mandate I met there. And so any transaction that occurred at the airport, if Alex was not there, there was another GMAP controller who was delegated to do that. Had to review it and ensure that it was according to plan and then co-sign on it.
Okay. How was your relationship with Mr. Cuffey?
Worked well. I didn't find it overbearing at all. You know, it's like my relationship with the gentleman who ran operations or the one who handled airport services or any one of the other major direct reports I had. Besides being the GMAP controller, Alex was a direct report on the financial side. So it was well, it worked well. He was competent.
Okay. Were there any tensions between Mr. Cuffey and the other staff as a result of his external authorities?
Well, people have questions whenever they are questioned. But other than that, that's just regular operational issues. You find them in any organization. If a guy submits a budget for X amount of dollars and he has to justify it and he can't, or if there are things that he's asking for that cannot be justified, then of course there'll be a little bit of a pushback, but that's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. It's healthy for an organization.
Were there any major battles with staff that resulted from Mr. Cuffey's position? I mean,
I didn't consider them major. No,
okay.
No. I mean, there were strong opposing opinions, but
from within the airport.
Yeah, from within the organization. But once you know what they are and you discuss the issues openly, you make a decision, and everybody's expected to follow.
Were there other, as a result of being a GMAT identified SOE, were there other constraints? Did GMAT impact your operations or affect your priorities or ability to operate or plan in any other way?
I don't know of any negative impact that GMAT had on the operation of the airport. I have stated some of the positive,
yeah.
You know, but I've mentioned getting additional resources, identifying additional training, for example. Those were all positive things, and those are all things that complemented what we wanted to do. I understand in some other organizations, GMAP was viewed as a hindrance. I don't know what conditions they were operating under, but I didn't see that at the airport. Number one, because I saw no need to hide anything from GMAP. Number two, if GMAP was acting contrary to the established goals and objectives of the organization, I would have been the one complaining to get it changed. I never had that. I think it was a positive experience. It's something that was necessary. It brought in a caliber of support that the airport needed. So
do you face throughout your tenure, were there, do you face any obstacles along the way that you did not anticipate?
Surprises, but those are, you are not fully aware of all of the challenges that exist in a organization we are when you are external to it. When you start peeling the layers away, you run into things that say, wow, I didn't know that was there. But your job as a manager is to now look at it, see what it is and how you can change it, mitigate the effects, or do something that makes your organization keep going.
Did you face any obstacles in carrying out your reforms, either from airport staff, from suppliers, from...
Of course, people object to change. People like the old closed system that they've got. You know, there were suppliers who thought I was, I don't know what names they gave me, but they really didn't like what I was doing. You know, when a guy has had a certain relationship of getting things done his way and all of a sudden is not there anymore, he doesn't like it. People he interfaces with don't like it, but it's a new reality. Your job as a manager is to let those who are within your organization know why the change is occurring, what benefits accrue to the organization because of those changes, and ensuring that people abide by the guidelines that are established. And when they don't, you have to ensure that they bear the consequences of their actions.
And maybe just one final question. Looking back on your tenure, do you have any recommendations any thoughts on your tenure? If you were to speak to someone who was entering a position that similar to what you entered in 2007, any advice you would give that person about what lays ahead?
Be organized, be thorough, be fair. Let those who work for you know what you are doing and why. And make sure you have competent people working with you. You're not gonna do everything yourself. You can't. If you could, you'd be the only guy there in the operation. Competence is key. Values, I mean, that's the bedrock of any organization. And if you can instill good values, establish good goals, and work in a very coordinated manner to get there, you'll be successful.
Mr. Simmons, thank you so much.
Thank you.